We're going to talk about unit testing, and we've just about got our resolution sorted out, and I've lost a couple of minutes, so I'm going to go pretty fast, mostly demos. The slides will be available afterwards, but I'm not going to talk to a bunch of slides because I want to get my demos in. I'm kind of going to be doing this a bit. It's a funny room. So apologies about the room. I'll try and sort of make sure I'm covering anyone. Any questions through, just stick your hand up and we'll cover it. We're going to talk about test-driven development, unit testing, and what support we've got now in Visual Studio 2012. So what's changed, and hopefully the good things and the positive things we can see in the next version. So I know it's getting a bit late, energy levels are low, so coding, right? We like coding, that's why we're here, and we like demos. So hopefully we can get into it quick. So here's me. I'm a Microsoft ALM MVP, and I've got prizes, by the way, so stay awake. Microsoft ALM MVP. Independent consultant. Contact details are there. If you want help with Visual Studio, with Scrum, get in touch. One thing I do want to call out is the Agile New Zealand conference. So we run a conference in March each year. First year was last year on Agile as well as ALM. So things like this, Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server. So March next year, we've got some great internationals locked in as well as some local talent. So keep an eye on the website. AgileNZ.co.nz if you are interested in either one of those things. Okay, let's get into it. One of the product planning themes for this cycle was developers as raving fans. So the product team wanted to make developers happy with the local experience. So a lot of investment had gone into Team Foundation Server and auditing and verification and management reports and keeping a bunch of stakeholders happy. But actually, this release, the individual developers got a lot of time and a lot of money in terms of the product cycle. So that was very much at their forefront. You know, it's time to reinvest in the tooling that the developers are using all day, every day. Who uses MS Test for their unit testing right now? Who loves it? Yeah. So pretty much this is what we feel right now about MS Test. Right, the few people that I find who use it, normally use it because they're told to, right? It's a company standard, you're not allowed to use anything else. Everyone else has fled the ship and now is XUnit or NUnit or Mock or, you know, a bunch of other exciting open source stuff. And so, you know, Microsoft are aware of this, and 2012, they've really tried to change the way they approach that ecosystem. So we're going to take a look at that. This was really one of the big statements. So we want the unit testing experience focused on developers. So not testers, developers. Writing and running unit tests while they write their code. So if you are familiar with the testing environment inside Visual Studio 2010, we've got test view, test list, audit tests. We've got all these different windows to manipulate the way we interact with our test environment. And it's actually a hugely powerful testing framework. But it's not about unit testing, and actually it's not even about developers. It's a fantastic tool if you're a technical tester, but if you're doing unit tests, either test first, TDD style, or test last, it's not actually that friendly. And so this was sort of the statement. Well, we want to put developers first, and within that, unit tests. You know, this isn't about integration tests and all those other things you can do with MS Test in VS 2010. Excellent, so let's get into it. I'm going to create a new project here, and you can see if I choose test, I've got a bunch of different options. So this is new. Right now we have one in 2010, right, the Uber test project, which could contain who knows what kind of tests. So we've split it out now into different types of project. But I'm not going to create one of those. I'm just going to create myself a class library. We'll call this my unit tests. Because I don't want to use MS Test. So I'm one of those people that's jumped ship and now I'm using something else. So I'm going to go in here and say, actually, I want to use XUnit. Hope that I have internet access. There we go. And that's pulled XUnit down. There's something else I want to show you that I've already installed in my extensions here. I've got the XUnit runner for Visual Studio. So you can just go online and search for this. And so this is going to plug my XUnit tests into Visual Studio. So I've got my Test Explorer open in right now. This is a new window. I get to this via Test, Windows, Test Explorer. So So let's see what we can see. We've added our X unit. Let's see, we want to do... Simple as I can make it. And we're building. And notice as we're building that green bar that's happening through the Test Explorer. Right, so that green bar is finding my tests that I have got in my solution. And you see it's found my X unit test. So first of all, no MS test. No test project, right? This was a C# DLL and I've now got X unit tests happening in here. So I'm not tied to Microsoft's version or vision of unit testing. I can play with the latest and greatest things that are out there. So they've decided to step back. Question? Sure. They've decided to step back from trying to own that ecosystem and said, hey, you know what? There are more exciting frameworks and they're moving more quickly than we can, so we need to enable a way for individual developers to hook into that community. Better? So that's XUnit. So it's found our test and I'm going to run this. We can see our green bar is going across, and we've got a green result. So it seems simple, right? But this unit testing and TDD has been around for years, and we've never had that. We've never had this red or green success or failure. You look at the output window, what does it say for each one? So what happens when we have a failure? Let's go through and just convert this. Maybe we'll build that again. So here's my failure, I get color, you know, one of the few teams that was allowed to inject color into Visual Studio. And I get my stack trace and I can go to the line that it failed on. So all that's good. And let's maybe add a couple more tests. And we'll call this 1 and 2. And I'm going to make the first two pass. So doing a build, found my new tests, and it's grouped them by default by what's been run, what hasn't. And I also can group by outcome or duration. So outcome, show me what's worked and what hasn't. So I'll run all of them. And you can see I've now got what's passed and what hasn't. And it's elevated the most important test, the failed test, to the top. So you saw should be false 2 is the last test I wrote, but it's been elevated to the top because this one has caused the failure. So this is the one you need to do something about. I can also go in here and do some filtering. So actually just show me the things with 2 in there. And it's just going to cut it down to the one I've, the last one on my list here. So basic searching. I can look for results, file path, fully qualified names. This is pretty much the support I've got in Unit Test Explorer right now. Question, Adam.
Can you sort by the slowest test?
Yes. So I can sort by duration and it will break them up into categories for me. Yeah. Okay. What I don't have, what's coming, but what isn't there yet, is nice grouping. So grouping that makes sense across my unit test runner. So whether that's by class, by project, right? You know the grouping that you're used to right now in the Test Explorer? It's not there. It's coming. So they're basically going to open up this ability for these unit test runners to provide grouping that makes sense in their context. So if you can imagine a BDD style runner might want to implement grouping a different way from a traditional TDD runner. So that's XUnit. Let's take a look at one more. Let's put in, say, NUnit. Yes, it's a plain class library. So we've got no MS test in here, no MS test support in here until I had a reference to Microsoft Visual Studio, test tools, unit testing. I can't use MS test at this point. Okay, so I've added, let's add an in-unit test. And So nUnit is remind myself, test case. And what this is going to do is tell me that it's now confused between all these different frameworks. And I've done this deliberately because I wanted to show you that I can have all of these types of test inside different, inside the same class. Right? So now it wants me to specify which is XUnit and which is NUnit. So I'll do that. Okay, my new test, and actually we'll run all of those. Actually, let's make my nUnit one work. Okay, so you get the idea. I don't even have to separate them into different classes, and I can have one environment, and I'm running across whatever test runner I like, right? Whatever makes sense for me. So really, really powerful. Now we're not saying, hey, you're using Visual Studio, you're using the Microsoft way if you want this nice integration with the IDE. If you don't want to call out to a console runner or a third-party piece, you get this support. So I think that's pretty compelling, right? This brings it all back into Visual Studio, one place to see the results. I can have different teams or different people in my team using their test runner of choice. Maybe some code favors a BDD style. Maybe some code favors TDD. Right? Use what works. Yeah, so all of these things, if I show you this next piece, this next slide, kind of how it's working. This is the architecture underneath it. So MS Test has been ripped out to use this same architecture. So they've dog-fooded this API. We have this unit test platform. And alongside that, we can write plugins to execute our favorite test runners. So you saw in my extensions view, I had the XUnit add-in for Visual Studio. I also had the NUnit add-in for Visual Studio. So that means then when I install NUnit, you saw me do the NuGet thing, it just finds it. Right, so you go to extensions, add the add-in for your runner of choice, and then install your runner and you're good to go. So these are some examples of runners that are that people have written that code for. You can write it yourself. It's really not that difficult. You want to open up their open source, right? You want to open up the add-in code for NUnit or XUnit. You can see the API for integrating with the Visual Studio Test Explorer. Not that complicated. I mean, you're just shelling out to running, you know, executing the test runner and reporting the results back up in a Visual Studio friendly way. And as I said, MS Test is using the same process. So they've ripped that out and it's going through the same process as all the others. We've got MS Test native there, so C++ unit testing support now. Limited, but it's there. NUnit, XUnit, QNUnit, and some more. So this is what we've got right now. There's more coming. We can do JavaScript now. So if any of you have used Chutzpah before, this is a headless Phantom JS runner. So that's how it interacts with QUnit and Jasmine to do JavaScript unit testing. So I've got a quick demo on that. This one's going to be a little bit small. Apologies for that. I'm just going to add a blank ASP.NET MVC application. I've already installed the extension for Chutzpah, right? This thing that will drive both Jasmine as well as QUnit. So I'll install the Jasmine package. And that will automatically put in some sample Jasmine tests as we've just got shown up over here. So I didn't even have to build that. So I will do a build before I run them and we'll see that some of them pass and some of them don't. Sorry, all of them fail right now. So the way that we hook JavaScript files together for Jasmine is just to add references. So I'm going to tell this spec. So this is a BDD style of testing for JavaScript. So we're just telling it where the JavaScript file lives. And the same for song. And this is just the sample tests that Jasmine brings down, which should mean that some of these tests now pass. Okay, so now three pass and two fail, because it's not the song JavaScript file throws some errors for not yet implemented. You get the idea. So really, really simple. Straight away, I can now do BDD. JavaScript is now kind of a first-class citizen in here. My unit test list could have a combination. I've got Jasmine for JavaScript. I've got in-unit, X-unit. You know, lots and lots of different test runners, whatever makes sense for my application that I want to focus on. So MS Test got some love too. They didn't just do this kind of new and exciting stuff for other test runners. Finally got true 64-bit support. So if you are right now doing that any CPU kind of workaround to try and get 64-bit, this is now real. We've got, as I mentioned before, some C++ unit test support, and it's faster. So they built a whole new runner. I forget the code name. Remember the code name, Adam?
No.
So they built a whole new runner for MS Test, which was, if you've got deployment turned off, if you're not doing code coverage, and a bunch of different checks like this, if you're just doing a basic unit test and you want to use MS Test, it invokes this new test runner, which is lightning fast. So something like 40 to 50% performance improvement from the old one. And it will automatically decide, depending on what options you've got turned on for that test. If you want to do code coverage, you're using the old runner with the old speed. But the new runner, if you've got just a basic test, very, very quick. And async support. So, you know, there's been a few sessions on async, I think, at TechEd, and it's a pretty exciting new development, and we want to make sure that that's fully supported from our TDD point of view. So how do we get in and make sure that our async code is testable? So this is an MS Test feature. So I'm going to get rid of this, and we'll create a new project. What was that? Thank you. So we're now going to create a test project. That will do. And we'll create some basic async. Maybe it's my... So I have my business objects that maybe call that to ERP. Task. So we're going to do some kind of long-running action. And maybe there's a property in here that gets set by this long-running action. Right, so the problem with trying to unit test this stuff normally is the side effects, right? The side effects going on by the async code that you may not be able to understand and trap in your test code. So for example, in this do long running action, let's say we take some time to do, so we want to simulate that. And we update our own balance. Okay, so now we go through and we want to test this. Thank you. And we want to test that our balance returns 500, is it? So what's going to happen when I run this test? Is it going to pass?
Fail.
It's going to fail. It's going to fail because? Right, because the unit test is going to fly through and we're not taking, you know, we can't necessarily get across what side effects are going to happen due to our async method, what it's going to do in there. So we need some way to support that for our tests. So we've got our summary down here. We failed, so the actual result was zero and we were expecting 500. So what we can do now is take advantage of our await keyword inside our unit test. So we have to return a task even though actually we don't care about it. And this is a gotcha, gets me all the time. If you forget to change that and you leave it as void, it just disappears. It doesn't show up in your unit test explorer, you don't get any bugs. And you kind of, well, where's it gone and why isn't it working? So remember to set it to returning a task. Okay, so that worked. So you can see that even async code now, we can still do unit test it appropriately and do TDD if we need to. So full support in terms of the new stuff that's coming out of our framework. Great, so I wanted to get into fakes. Fakes are one of the most exciting new developments for me. If you're used to using mocking frameworks, RhinoMox, Mock, TypeMock, any of those tools in your unit testing, who uses those things, any one of those? So quite a large number. This is Microsoft's implementation of the same kind of thing. So they call it the fakes framework and talk about isolation and stubbing, or really stubs and shims. Two different categories, and we'll look at each one of those. So a stub gives us concrete implementation of an interface. This is the traditional RhinoMock style, where I want to substitute something that implements an interface. Shims are a little bit different. So shims are our scaffolding. When we're really in trouble, this is our get out of jail card. So we'll show you what that looks like. Get rid of this. So I've got this fakes project already, and somebody's made some great performance optimizations on it for us. We all know what happens with performance optimizations. Let's just make sure that's going to be big enough. That looks better. So I have this scheduling service. I wrote this on a plane. I get a lot of planes. And I was trying to look up whether the airline I like to fly on goes to a certain place on a certain day. So I thought, well, they almost have this type of system. So here was my fake call to that type of system. Imagine a big ERP system or booking engine. And so I have to build a big complicated web request to basically pass through and say, hey, do we fly to this destination on this day of the week? And we're a small airline. We've only just started. So we go to Mexico on Fridays. That's it. But hey, we're growing, you know. We don't come back. We just go to Mexico on Fridays. We have a lot of planes in Mexico for some reason. And so this looks okay, right? We've got this interface defining our type. So this looks all right. And then we look at the code that calls this. And we employed this guy, the stupid coder guy. And he said he's sped up our system no end, right? We've taken all this traffic on our mainframe off the back because he's decided that, hey, I know best. And I know you only fly on Fridays to Mexico. So if it's Friday, then I'll call the service. And if it's not, we don't fly. And we've been tasked, and we're good TDD developers, we've been tasked with sorting this out. So we have to go through our TDD process, right? Red, green, refactor. So, okay, so we can only change this code when we've got a passing test. And it's not Friday. How do I test this code? Anybody? Sorry? Right, but how am I going to intercept where it's checking datetime.now? Change my system clock. How long is that going to work for?
Now?
Right.
6 days.
6 days? assert that it's called?
You could put it off till Friday.
I could put it off till Friday. Yep. You get the idea, right? There's a lot of code out there like this. It wasn't written in with testing in mind. And it does a lot of things inside these methods that are impossible to get into in order to refactor out into a cleaner design, you know, managing the dependencies. And so this is where we use our shims. This is our get out of jail. And so we need a way to break in here to get inside what's happening in datetime.now. So I'm going to show you what to do here. So we'll go to our test code. So I've got a test method ready to go. And we'll put the basics together. Well, we want to search for this. And let's say we are going to go to Mexico. And we need to pass in one of these iScheduling services. Okay, so let's get one of those. And we'll pass that in. And we want it to be true. So we hope it's true, regardless of what day this test is run on. And it's a great name, isn't it? Okay. So I'm thinking this should fail. What day? It's not Friday, right? That'd be a disaster, wouldn't it? Hopefully this is going to fail. It's thinking. Good. So it's failed. Expected true, but it actually got false. So now we need to break in. And this is how we get our shim. So datetime.now lives in MS Corelib, which lives in system. So you've got to obviously know where the thing lives that you want to intercept. You want to do this runtime interception. So inside my test project, here is system, and I'm going to right-click Add Fakes Assembly. And so you see it's created this fakes folder for me and put in the details of the things it's faked. So I'll go back up and add a using statement for that. I now have, where am I? System. I now have, actually, I probably don't need it in here. I now have a system.fakes. Let's see if it shows up. And what I want to do is override the call to datetime.now. So let's try that. Which I think it will call shim datetime. There really is a using statement that it wants me to put in here. I think I do. Aha. Okay. Right, it would be helpful if you generate your fake in your unit test project. There we go. Now I should get told. There we go, system.fakes. So it's created this shim for me. And this is a naming convention, right? Shim, whatever it is that it's created for you. So it's shimmed out every object inside there available for me to use. So I want to do this shim date time. Actually, date time is a static, so I don't need to do that. I want to use this, now get. So I want to intercept the getter on now. So if I had, I'll show you for a stub in a minute, where I have properties that move around, they appear on this method name as well. But this is what I want to override. So let's do that. I want to say return a new date time of, what are we now? Tomorrow is Friday, right? Does that look good? always return tomorrow. So we'll always be Friday. So that's great. Let's go ahead and run this. And hopefully our test is going to pass. Oh. So it's giving me some warning here. And the warning it's giving me is, you know what? You just overrode dateTime.now. When do you want that to stop? Well, we can't just say, hey, for all time, for my whole app domain, override dateTime.now. So you can imagine my unit test runner might be calling unit dateTime.now. I might be calling dateTime.now in other tests. So it's not a good idea to do this. So Microsoft have put this basically compiler check-in to make sure that you put a using context around it. Otherwise, it's literally going to override every time you call dateTime.now, and you are going to get into trouble with that. So this is the reminder, and it gives you the code to put in, right? This using shimscontext.create. Shimscontext. So we'll try that one more time. And what's actually happening here is it's rewriting the IL on the fly. This is how it's doing it. Well, it's intercepting the call, saying, okay, I've got the shim set up, and I'm just going to do an IL rewrite right on the fly. So it's, you know, right at the bare metal, this is happening. Look at that. We've just tested the untestable. We now have this scaffolding to refactor this into decent code. So dangerous. Don't then go, great, we're done. Time to go home. Right? Now we finish off and refactor the decent code, hopefully. Question? So the question was, this will get, however many times dateTime.now gets called, this same result will be returned, correct. That's the reason for the using statement. So yeah, if you might want multiple using statements or additional logic if you want to constrict this use to a certain scenario. Yep, so I can do multiple using statements and have different results returned if I like. I probably want short methods, though, that this only happens once. Another question? Sorry, a bit louder? Can I nest the shim context? Yes. So the shim context you saw didn't ask me for date time. That's just an overall statement. Another question? Inside that using statement? Absolutely. Yeah, so just inside that context. Okay, I'm going to keep moving because we've got a lot more to cover. Right to my next slide. Look at that. Perfect segue. Will all of that work on server integration and builds? Yes, it will. So I can use Team Foundation Build. If I install those test runners, you saw me do that via NuGet for my local one. If I install those runners and the add-ins on my build server, it will all work seamlessly. I can also do it on hosted build, so Elastic Build. It will work with test impact analysis, so it works with the other tooling too. So maybe we'll show you quickly how we're going for time. Okay, real quick. Let's show you our stubs real quick. So we'll do a new test project. Maybe we'll call this one session scores. So we want to make sure that our ticket eval scores are being saved properly. Right? That sounds like a good thing to do. So we have some kind of ticket session object. So we're going to go TDD. Right? So I'm going to show you how to use stubs whilst you're doing TDD. So whilst we haven't even got those objects created yet. So let's create another project. Which will be for our ticket scores. I'm going to get rid of that for now. So we want to create this, and we'll create it in the other project, and it won't be an interface. And we'll need to add a reference to it. So we've got a reference to it, okay. So maybe we have, what, a code on here, which gets me. Dev 314? Are we in 314? And we have a score. Let's say we score a 4. And we'll get those created as well. And I want to save that. So we have some kind of repository. And actually, who knows? We don't know where it's going to go yet. We just know we're going to need some kind of repository. So let's create that. So we're doing TDD. We don't know how we're going to store it yet. And that one will be an interface. And then we want to save our session. Actually, we'll use our repository to save our session, shall we? Which way around should we do it? No, we'll save our session. So we'll have a save method here, and we'll pass in a repository, right? So we're injecting our dependency and doing all the good stuff. And we'll generate a method for that. So now in here, we know we're not doing anything yet. Maybe we'll just delegate to a save on our repository. And in here, perhaps we send in what our score and our code. So let's get that one built. So hopefully this will just fail with, right, we haven't got anything that implements our repository yet. So that's okay, because we don't know. Maybe this is going to be stored in the cloud. Maybe it's going to be stored on my local file system. Who cares? We're just doing TDD to get our logic sorted out at this point. So we want some way to actually implement this repository. So let's check out our session scores. And let's fake or add a fakes assembly for my ticket scores. And so now what I want to do is you saw me use shims, we're going to use stubs. So stubs, remember, are ways for me to implement a concrete interface. So I want to actually change this to be a stub. And again, it's been created for me. One thing I should say on these, they're recreated if need be every time the thing that it's stubbed from builds. So I don't have to regenerate them ever again, right? They'll just be kept in sync. So if we add new methods to the thing that we stubbed, they'll just show up in my stub class. So now I want to put some behavior on here. So when save is called, which takes an int, which was our score, and a string, which was our code, return true. Do we have a return on save? Let's change that. And let's make that spool too, right? We want to know that it's all gone well. Thank you. Okay, let's see that in our test explorer. So we've used the stub, and we've used the stub to define the behavior we want to see. We haven't had to implement our repository yet, so we've delayed, you know, this whole principles, last responsible moment. I don't even know how I want to save this yet. And so this is a way for me to quickly get all my logic sorted and actually test if this is going to go okay. So let's add some more logic now. Right, we don't want to do something more interesting. So now I want to test Adam's scores. Adam's another presenter who's just sitting down here. So what's the behavior? Adam, what was your code? Can you remember? Okay.
2-1-3. 2-1-4.
Perfect. So if Adam scored a 5, not in this lifetime, I actually want to check what came through. If I'm writing the system, maybe I want to do a bit of manipulation on the way through, right? Because a 5 doesn't sound right. So we'll do a bit of smoothing for it. So we're going to add a bit of code in here and say, well, actually, I want to just check a few things. So, well, okay, if the code was dev 214, and what do we want to say? We still want to return true. But we want to assert, so I can insert inside my stub here, assert that, well, he really got a 3. All right, so we'll help out a bit of scoring. And we need to finish that off. So we want to make sure that Adam's 5 turns into a 3. And so hopefully our test will fail. Not run. That's my one. Okay, good. So we'll go through and implement that logic. So we'll go into our save on our repository. We'll say, so, what do we want here? If two and four. And actually, we should probably do this for all these scores, right? Not just a 5. So maybe, that seems fair. And that probably should be an in. Okay, what do you think? That look good? Thinking about it. So if you haven't done a build, this will do a build for you if it's changed. Great. So we're all good. So we've used that. We still haven't implemented where this gets stored, but we've used our stub to go through and test our logic. And so again, it's helping us in this test, in this TDD style, because it's making me able to test my business logic before I even have to worry myself about persistence. So it's a nice integrated way to do that. Okay, cloud build. Everything that we've just seen, as we said, should work seamlessly on the cloud. And Anthony Borton tried to demo this earlier and ran out of time. Who was at Anthony's session? Excellent. So I ought to get plus points if I do his demo. Let's try it out. We've got cloud build. So I have a project set up here with unit tests from two different test runners. So if you look at the code here, let's make that a little bit bigger. Yeah, that's great, isn't it? Let's go 17. Okay, good. So you can see this one here is MS test, and the one underneath is XUnit. So two different test runners. And my tests both pass, which is great. So I'm going to go and kick off a build from Team Explorer. So I'll kick that off whilst we start talking. And this is connected to a Team Foundation service project in the cloud. You'll know that because if I go here into my my build menu, manage build controllers, you can see there my hosted build controller is virtual. So I'm using Elastic Build. This is provisioning me a VM, running my build, giving my build results back, and ripping apart that VM for the next person. So paving it for the next one. So you can never get your build artifacts confused with someone else's, right? It's completely siloed. And the nice thing about this is I'm only paying for what I use, right? So if I choose to go this model, I can get really, really high scale build when I need it. My nightly build might be, you know, enormous in terms of processing, but I get the power of the cloud in terms of the elastic process. And so we can see this one's running right now, and two here that I've completed earlier. Let's open it up and we can see what's happening. So in terms of getting my binaries up to the build process, right, I may have third-party things I depend on. They're not going to be on Microsoft's build image. So I have some options around that. I can use any public NuGet server and reference them that way, and the build process will just pull those in. I can use a custom build process. So if you know about customizing team build, customizing the XAML file, you can do that. Upload your XAML file, and Microsoft will run your custom build process, which could do any manual deployments that you want, right? Go and get the stuff that you need. Finally, you can put it in source control, and that's the one I've used here. So if I look at my source control while that's running, see how fast the cloud is? That's not too bad. You see, I have this XUnit Utils folder, and these are the files that make up that Visual Studio extension, that is the add-in. So that, you know, it's a VSIX, which is one of the extensions. If you open that up, that's just the zip file. So if you open that up, pull out the DLLs that actually make up the add-in, put them in your source control, and then I go back to that control view I showed you. Properties. See this version path to custom assemblies. Where in your source control are you hosting your custom assemblies? So you just point it to that folder, drop all your custom stuff in there, and the build controller will just reach in and get that. Okay. So, courtesy of Anthony Borton, Enhance ALM, and Equinox, he's giving away a seat on any of his Visual Studio 2012 training courses, valid for a year. So this is a pretty cool prize, right? So I'm going to come up with a question soon, just so you know what the prize is going to be. Teaser. So I've dropped my binaries in there. That's going to pick them up and run them as part of my build. And that's how I'm going to get XUnit support on my build server. So how's that build going? 26 seconds ago. There we go. So I look at my build report, and I can see some check-ins. Well, I didn't check anything in. First prize, and only prize, what is it checked into my source control? What is the Elastic build checked into my source control? And? The libraries. Yes, there you go. Come and see me at the end. So the binaries, this is the drop folder, right? The things that it's built, it's going to drop them into your source control. Normally you'd put them on a UNC that you'd lock down somewhere, but there's nowhere else for it to put it in the cloud. So it's going to drop them into your source control. It's also putting in the build report. So what I'm looking at now, the log files, are all in my source control. And you know this because it's checked in by Elastic Build, and it has the no CI tag. So it's saying, don't kick off another CI tag because of this check-in, otherwise we'll never be finished. Okay, cloud build. Come on, keep wearing. So the last thing I want to show, I had a lot of demos, is continuous testing. Who uses nCrunch? Anybody? A few hands over there. So continuous testing, right? This idea that I can just keep coding, and I want testing to just be following me all the time. I don't have to worry about running tests. Just keep up with me and let me know when things have failed. And so Microsoft, whilst not going all the way to nCrunch, have made some improvements in this area for Visual Studio 2012. So let's take a look at that. If I go back to my earlier project, which one do we have? Maybe this one. And see what have we got right now. This is going to work, this is going to work, this is going to work. So let's make them all work first. I've got two options to turn this on. So I'll run all my tests first. One, two, three, four. Am I missing something here? Thank you. Okay, so there's my four tests. Two ways to turn this on. This little icon here, run tests after build. Equally, I can go into the test view. Notice the windows. We have one window. Only now one window. So that plethora of windows in 2010, test view, test lists, all gone, right? This is just about us, the devs. So testers, MTM for you. So I've turned it on. And now I want to get into this cycle of just coding, not having to worry about the tests keeping up with me. So if I go in here and say, let's do this for now. I'm just going to hit build. And so I'm still going to keep typing here. Right, that was happening on a background thread. The tests, while they're running, aren't blocking me from still coding. So now all I have to do is code and hit build. I don't even have to save anymore because build doesn't save. Question?
What happens if you change something that you're testing?
It ran all the tests. Yes, when I compile. Yeah, when I compile, it's running all of my tests on a background thread. Yeah, question? It'd be nice, wouldn't it? You can have check-in policies in Team Foundation Server that says you must have run all the tests before you can check in, but unfortunately you can't force that on. Build also is lightning fast now, so huge performance gains in build. Question at the back? Sort of. So let me show you what it does do. The question was, does it run intelligently? NCrunch will only run tests that it thinks are impacted. I'm going to show you that. Let's make this one fail. So I've done a build, and you can see that's failed. Now I'm going to go through and just add some random code to something else. Do another build. So you can see what's happened here. It ran only the test that failed last time. And because that failed, it didn't bother with any of the others. So it's trying to give you instant feedback. Stop coding, you're breaking things. Right? I'm not going to run the 8,000 tests to tell you that one has failed. It's going to say, you know what, one has failed, stop. And so you see the grayed out. Not sure how well that's shown on the screen. Not too bad. This telling you the last time they ran, they were green, but you've got one failure. And it ran that first last time. So what they're looking at, I guess to further answer the question, is what are the other interesting things that make one test more important than another? And it's more than just about impact analysis. So they're thinking about code complexity. If the code is very complex, maybe that makes it interesting. Right? What are the heuristics that go into making one test more important than another? So no answers yet, but the product team are thinking along those lines. Question over here. If you've got particularly complex tests that take a long time to run, can you tag them and say run them later? Is that the question?
Yeah, so just put an attribute saying run manually
as opposed to whatever. So test categories were something we had in 2010. They or something similar are coming in an out-of-band release for 2012. Right now, all you could use was the grouping by duration and only run those fast ones. Yeah, I mean, this is very much geared at unit tests as in-memory tests. If you want to do integration tests that take a long time, you know, MS test style tests are good for that, and something to tag them with, like a category, is coming. Okay, so I just want to wrap up. Last few slides. So you can see the direction, this idea of continuous testing. So what's gone? To make way for this new approach, they've taken a step backwards in some things, right? Remember I said they ripped MS test out so they could go back through the API. And to do that, actually, some of the things that, frankly, we won't miss, right? Private accesses, goodbye. Generate unit test wizard, goodbye. Hope to never see you again. You know, the stuff that, again, that caused a lot of controversy when it was put in, and people were like, you know what, Microsoft doesn't get unit testing. The product team, the part of the product team that build this, get unit testing. They get TDD. And so they're happy to just whip these things out. Test lists were horrible. They caused source control problems. They've gone. So test categories were not, and there is a replacement coming for those. Test impact analysis in the IDE, gone. Nobody ever used it. Anyone use it? One guy. Wow. Okay. It's gone. It's still there in in Team Build, so I can still turn it on for manual tests. I can collect data from MTM from the manual testers, and that will help them with recommended which test cases to run. and I can still generate impact data off the build and team build. But as far as the IDE goes, in terms of the thought here is, look, just run all the tests, right? Just run them all. Really? You need to know which ones have been affected? Just run them all. Be safe. So it didn't add a lot of value to that main scenario. Okay, so 3 minutes for questions.
I like that wizard.
Which wizard?
The wizard that they removed.
Right.
And I used it.
There had to be someone. Did you actually ever use it or just demo it? Be honest. For demos. Yeah.
They're going to put it back in the first update.
They're going to put it back? They're probably going to put it back in the brand new Visual Studio demo edition. Which will be a skew just for people who like to stand up in front of big screens, right? There is no related content. It's all finished now. I think I'm the last ALM session of the talk, so I've got nothing else to link to. If you haven't, if you wanted to see any more on Team Foundation Server Visual Studio, unlucky. But still, the party's tonight. So any further questions before we wrap up? Yes. I got some good news and bad news. So the question was, which edition of Visual Studio is all this in? Good news and bad news. The good news, the bad news, let's start with there, is Fake's framework is ultimate. The good news is the Unit Test Explorer and add-ins for all the different runners is pro. It doesn't work in Express because there's no extensibility model in Express, so you don't get it in the free one. But pro, you get to add in different unit test runners, but the Fakes framework, shims, stubs, Ultima only. So the question was, do you need Ultima to generate the fakes that will then run in premium? Got some bad news and some bad news for you. yeah. You can generate them in Ultima, yes, that works. Running them in premium, not so much. Yes?
Can you use a cloud build if you've got an on-premise TFS
service? So the question was, can you use a cloud build if you've got on-premise TFS service? Not right now, but I imagine it's, not right now. There's nothing to stop you having one on-premise TFS project and one cloud TFS project and using your cloud for build and integrating that process once the binaries drop into your source control. But there's no seamless way to just unpick build from on-premise and point it at cloud right now. But it's going to come, right? I have no inside information on that, but it's going to come. And the other thing is, you know, lab management on-premise, integrating with cloud in terms of provisioning build servers and deploying my app for testing, it's got to come. Any other questions? Yes. Yes. You're killing sales. Run tests after build is Ultima only, right now.
And is there any good free events on Sunday?
So CodeCamp is on Sunday, which is free all day, Auckland Business School at the university. I'll be speaking. We've got like Visual Studio 2012 launch. We've got a whole bunch of good speakers, 12 dev speakers alone, plus business, SharePoint, infrastructure tracks. So do come along if you haven't had enough of learning. And it's free. Did I say it was free? Yep. Prizes? Excellent. Standing between you guys and the bar. Thank you very much. Please do fill out the evals.